is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:24. We promised you a few surprises on today's show. We're tweeting on Nation Radio. Wanye says we're going to try and trend on Twitter one day. I don't know what he means, but he seems sincere, so we're going to try for it. Follow us at It's Nation Radio, or throw a hashtag out and see if he can explain it to me. I swear to God I'm breaking the law just by saying hash. When you grew up what I did, man, everything's changed. Okay. We're joined on the radio by Matt Bug from Dauber Hockey. Matt, how are you, man?
Good. How are you today, Alan?
Good. Now, you're heading to the draft as well, right?
I sure am.
We're going to look forward to reports from you, too, and specifically about some of the really, really deep choices. And you know, it's funny because I think all of us follow the draft to the point the first round is over or maybe into the second round. But you're preparing the Dauber Hockey draft list. Now, how deep do you go? Do you know 250 players fairly well on draft day?
I myself will know about that many in the Dauber Hockey Prospects report, which will be out in about a week or two. There will be 100 profiles as well as a mock draft of the first three rounds. But really, I should be able to provide a pretty good overview of what's happening, no matter who's taken and when on the second day.
Now, if you subscribe to Dauber Hockey, you're going to do that many. How many players would the average, would the reader be able to read from the entire Dauber Hockey staff?
Well, there should be, let me think here, there would be over 100 profiles of the draft-eligible kids, and then four or five per team that are already drafted. So you're looking at a good 250, 300 profiles.
Today, Kyle Woodleaf, I guess it was yesterday, he released his latest list at USA Today, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is finally number one, and that now goes across the board. Bob McKenzie on TSN, International Scouting Services, the Hockey News released their issue, and I believe Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is number one there. Is it fait accompli he's the number one choice?
I think so. At this point, with everything that's happened, it really would have taken an exceptional job by Adam Larson to knock off Nugent-Hopkins, and especially in the minds of the Oilers, who have gotten a chance to see Nugent-Hopkins now both in the province and in our city during the postseason. He didn't have the greatest playoffs, of course, but I think that they saw enough and they were able to do enough homework that he should easily be number one.
Now, for the Oilers, they're sitting, after they make that first pick, they're sitting at 19, and I know Steve Tambellini made that Dustin Penner trade, so he had a pick in the middle of the round and an opportunity to trade up. Two questions here. Do you see them trading up? And number two, how far, and do you think it'll be for a defenseman along the lines of Siemens, Murphy, and Dougie Hamilton?
I think the most logical move we'll see would be a slight bump up into the 12-13 range to ensure that the team can grab one of Mark McNeil or Mark Scheifele, the two big centers that will be on the board. Both are big boys. They measure in at well over 6'2 and 200 pounds. Scheifele is a little lighter. He's around 175, I think, right now. But they both have exceptional ability for being as big as they are and could easily be high-end number two centers or even number one centers.
So they could move up to maybe the Calgary slot, trade the 19 and something else, and get in around that 13. You think they'll be able to get a quality player there too?
I certainly think so. They have the ammo with Calgary's third-round pick, which I'm sure that the Flames would like to have back, as well as Pittsburgh's fourth-round selection. So they've got the bullets to spend if they really feel one of those two centers or another player is worth moving up for.
So if they stay at 19, they're going to be getting more of a role player type. The really good power-forward offensive types are going to be off the board by 19?
There will still be some power forward types on the board. I would look personally at Brandon Saad from Saginaw and Boone Jenner from Oshawa. Both are about 6'2", 200 pounds. Jenner is an interesting case. He's a high-end player in terms of his compete level. Maybe not in his skating, but the guy is just a born and bred winner. Saad is the opposite. Despite his size, he hasn't really used it effectively all year, and that could cause him to tumble. I've seen some rankings that have him as low as 30, but he's a potential 25, maybe even 30 goal man at the NHL level.
So let's move into the second round now. Let's assume that the Oilers do pick, the big power forward center from Prince Albert and take Nugent-Hopkins. Does that pick at 31 to begin day two, does it have to be a defenseman, or do you think they would trend towards that?
I think they would certainly trend towards that, especially if someone like David Musil was still on the board. He's obviously got Oilers connections with his father, Frank, but he's really everything this team needs at 6'3 and 200 pounds. He's a very simple, very dependable physical defenseman. He was pushed at times to do a little too much this year because Vancouver's blue line wasn't as deep as it typically is. And he doesn't have first-round talent in terms of puck skills or skating, but he could easily be what Ladislav Schmid is today.
So if they have their heart set on Simmons and Oleksiak, and they're both gone by day two start, Musil is he's in that range. He's a similar caliber.
He is a slightly lesser caliber. I won't ever expect him to peak 30 points in the NHL. And his skating, as I said, does leave a lot to be desired, but he's a very tough kid, and he's going to take care of his own end. I can't think of a better fit for our team at 31 if they don't grab a defenseman on day one.
Okay, and then as they go deeper into the draft, round two, they have two picks. If they keep them 62nd and 74th, how do you see them? What's in that range that might be of interest?
Well, the Oilers are an interesting team to watch in the third round, as we've learned, as they typically make some of their more gut instinct picks. We saw Troy Hesketh and Cab Abney in 2009 and Ryan Martindale last year. And I think no matter what they do in the first couple of rounds, Max Everson from Edina High School is going to be high on their list. He's a big kid. I think he's about 6'1", 200 pounds, very smooth skater. And his coach is none other than Dave Langevin, so he's getting some good mentoring there in his role.
And what about the second pick, the Calgary pick, if they pick it? Is there anybody else in that area that might be, you know, useful or somebody that we should keep track of?
Well, center Vincent Trocheck from Saginaw would be an interesting selection. He's only 5'11 and 178 pounds, but he plays like he's 6'4". He's a very gritty guy. He reminds me a lot of New York's Ryan Callahan, and I think he could be a great checking line forward and maybe even an NHL captain one day.
The Oilers last year, of the 11 picks, 7 of them went to the combine. How many of these kids in that second, third round range are going to be among the 102 players that are going to be going to this year's combine?
I don't believe Everson of the players that I've listed will be there. I believe Trocheck is on the invite list. And even if a player isn't invited, we have seen a couple of teams run their own in-house combines. So if there's a player that they're particularly interested in, I remember reading that Hesketh was invited to New Jersey's own prospect camp. And so they were able to get a closer look at him. Now, it didn't end up panning out that they selected him, but there is certainly an opportunity there for teams to bring in kids that they like.
Now, do you think this is going to be a draft where they go get another enforcer or one of those big type defensemen in the 4-5 range? Are they going to go off the board a little bit later?
I think we'll see them stick pretty close to the plan in the fourth round. If they do go for anything, I think they may take advantage of one of the goaltenders that could fall. Owen Sound's Jordan Binnington is a peculiar case. He's got poor numbers at first glance, but he won 27 of his 46 starts. And he's the number one goalie for a Memorial Cup team at the end of it all. If Binnington is yanked again as he was 4 games into the first round, he's probably going to see a stock tumble. There's also Samu Perhonen from Finland, 6'4", 175. Sparkling numbers for JYP and Finnish Junior, but he came up lame at the under-18s, and I think teams are questioning his technical ability. He's very athletic and flexible, but like Mika Kiprusoff before he sort of rounded out his game, he's a very raw kid right now, needs a lot of coaching.
I want to backtrack because you mentioned Troy Hesketh. Are you hearing anything about him coming to the WHL? Is that possible, or is he in limbo right now?
I think it would be the smartest move for him to come into the league. He has really had a tough time breaking in even at the junior A level, and I think his scholarship, I haven't heard any official word obviously, but I think it may be in danger. If they do put it off again, it would be certainly a poor sign, and I don't think the Oilers would look to sign him. But I think this would be a great opportunity to him to sort of recoup some of the momentum he's lost the last couple of years.
Now, as we get into rounds five, they don't have a sixth round, but they have 5, 6, and 7. Are there any, big-time power forward raw material that you see and maybe going to pass through the draft to that point that the Oilers can target?
Well, I would love to see the Oilers target Thomas Spelling from Denmark. He's 6'2 and 174 pounds. And he just won everywhere he played this year. He was the Rookie of the Year in the Denmark Men's League. His team, the Herning Blue Fox, won the league championship. And get this, he also won gold for Denmark at not only the under-18 Division I tournament, but the under-20s. And he really reminded me of watching Anže Kopitar, the way that he stood out among boys at both of those tournaments. He's just really polished, and some team is going to get a really good player in him.
Now, we're thrilled to be having you part of our draft day coverage, day number two specifically. We'll be live at the Pint, and you'll be at the draft. We're excited to have you because you know so much about these deep prospects that the Oilers will be taking in the later rounds. When do you head for the draft?
I believe I'll be leaving on the 23rd, and of course the draft will start the evening of the 24th, and then I'll be there all day at the XL Energy Center on the 25th.
Now, have you been to a draft before?
Yeah, I've been to two. I've been to Columbus in 2007 and Los Angeles last year.
How much information do you pick up on the I asked Dustin Nielsen this a minute ago, and he's been to several drafts too. How much information do you pick up just being on the draft floor that you wouldn't obviously, you know, watching television?
Well, there's a lot of talk, obviously, on the media riser. You'll hear guys that are more connected to certain teams than others, and you'll also often see scrums along the little barrier they set up between the media area and the draft floor. The other interesting thing is that you'll sometimes see players either in the stands or wandering around on the draft floor that aren't players you might expect to see. So I'm always on the lookout for something. The second day can be sort of disappointing when it comes to interviews because not a lot of those players show up. But when you see one, it always piques something in your mind. You always wonder who has actually told this kid that they're going to be taking him and to make sure he's there.
How devastating is it? And I'm speaking as a parent here. I feel terrible for these kids. I can't remember the name of the young man, but he was an OHL kid last year who was not drafted with the 30th pick in the first round, and he got up and he left, and you could tell it was, you know, a pretty terrible moment for him. How tough is it to watch that and then to be a part of that, to see these kids so disappointed at the end of the first night?
Well, I remember hearing a story from somebody about a young man who was told that he would be, you know, a third round pick at absolute lowest, and he waited around, didn't go in the second, didn't go in the third, and ended up being a draft pick at all, and he never heard from his agent again. And not only does it hurt to sit there and have that bite away at your ego, but the people that have supported you up to that point may all disappear once it's all said and done.
Wow, that's pretty tough stuff. Let's go back to the top of the draft here. One final question for you, Matt. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a lot about the top eight picks, and I mean, if you follow the draft, you can list them off. Those top eight picks, and then, you know, it's Joel Armia, it's Duncan Siemens, there's lots of people, but there seems as though there's a little bit of a distance between number eight and number nine. Is that something the media's made up, or is it real?
I think that gap is certainly real. Any of those top eight picks could, in my mind, be number one line or first pairing players. I think after that point, though, you start looking more at role guys that you don't expect to fill that role, players that lack certain tools right now that they would need. Now, maybe they develop them later on, like a Ryan Getzlaff or a Jeff Carter, but you just don't bank on that at that point, and that's especially true this year. Anyone from pick 20 to 25 through all the way to 45, you're getting the same type of player with the same type of flaws. It's a very unusual year.
All right. You know what, Matt? Thanks so much for your time today, and we're really looking forward to hearing from you as the draft rolls out, and we'll probably have you on before that just to tee it up.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Alan.
Thanks very much. That's Matt Bug from Dauber Hockey. You can read him, obviously, online at Dauber Hockey. A very interesting site if you've never been to it, and certainly has the draft covered. Interesting fellow. Now, we've got a very busy show. In the second hour, we're going to be talking to Kurt Ludeke and also Matt Fenwick. Matt's a longtime friend and a guy who is very interesting. And Kurt, we've been talking to him pretty much every month or so leading up to the draft, and he's had some interesting items on his blog over the last little while. We're going to talk. We got plenty of emails. You can certainly email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. We'll have some of your emails in the next little while. And don't forget, Wanye is here in the studio today, and Sis will be talking only on Twitter, so I can't interview him. But he is definitely on Twitter. You can follow him at It's Nation Radio and say hello this afternoon. We're going to talk a little bit about Daryl Cates, about Derek Boogaard, the Canucks, the Bruins, the Memorial Cup, and more right after this.